Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Okay, continuing with verse 39 of the Sandarbha. Second section, and one must concentrate the mind on Him, the only all-blissful absolute truth. Otherwise, one will be misled and will cause his own degradation. So, say again? Which page? I have 21, but you might have on 20. It means on the, in those, that 8.1, when we're doing Jiva Goswami's Siddhartha's, then there's that you have, it goes, it starts with, what do you call it? Yeah. It has verse 1, then 2, then 5, then 39. You see the 39? Okay, then in 39, then there's 5 numbers under that. So in the end of the second one. Okay? Okay. One must concentrate the mind on Him, the only all-blissful absolute truth. Otherwise, one will be misled and will cause his own degradation. Because anything other than Krishna is illusion. So even though you're using these processes connected to Krishna, still Krishna has to be the focus. Otherwise, Krishna would just say, do your duty without attachment for me. Right? And he would stop there in the Gita. Right? But then he spent a whole chapter describing Dhyana Yoga. So this Dhyana Yoga means that the whole point in the yoga is to get to the point where you're meditating upon Him. Right? Absorbed in Him. Does that make sense? It's a very important thing because, see here, as we may, the service itself is important because that's the medium through which you express your devotion. But still, that affection to Him must be there. Does that make sense? It's very important because in the advanced stages of devotional service, on the platform of bhava, the middle position is that of samadhi, absorption. So unless that absorption becomes complete, you will not progress beyond that point. Does that make sense? And the reason that one doesn't go beyond that point, because one is absorbed in the pleasantries of the activities of the spiritual world. Does that make sense? Right? So just because it's spiritual, great. But the point of the spiritual is that it's being used in Krishna's service to please Him. And that's your only purpose in life. Does this make sense? So therefore, that's why it's part of the practice now is that it's being done for Him as a person. Does that make sense? Just like... let us, very general, broad category. If you're doing an activity and you're focusing on the activity, let's say you're doing some service for somebody, something personal. Let's say like cooking for someone. Now, let us say you just focus only on the cooking. I mean, well, okay, first we don't focus on that, we just cook out of habit, right? Then that will be one level of quality of the food. Now if we do it that we're concentrating on how well it's done, that would give another level. But if it's done thinking of that person, that you're doing it to please them, will that not have another level? Right. So that's the point. Okay? So if we don't come to that point of concentrating on Him, the mind will concentrate on something and you will get distracted. Because you only have two alternatives, going towards Krishna, going away from Krishna. There's no such thing as remaining neutral, right? The jiva cannot remain neutral. That's how we got here in the first place. We were neutral towards Krishna. Does that make sense? He was important. It was nice. It's good, great there being in the spiritual realm. It's a nice place, and you know, doing these things connected with Krishna is great, but you know, that's as far as it went. So then what happens is we become distracted and we come here. Does that make sense? Because if you're not going towards Krishna, that neutrality will turn into being inimical. right? That's just the nature of the way things are, right? If you have a relationship, it's either dynamic, it's developing with the person, or if it's just kind of ho-hum, staying in the middle, it will go away, right? Good morning, Sarah.
You were in Thailand.
Kind of like that.
Siam.
Yes. Okay, does that make sense? So then Śrīla Śrīdhara Swāmī comments, this verse means that one should concentrate his mind on the Lord, tam eva satyam bhajate, who alone distributes himself in so many manifestations. Sa eka sarvadhi, nimishadhi means minds. Vrityana bhuta sarva. One should not be attached to anyone or anything else, na antarasa jet, because from that attachment, one falls, atmapata, into the material world of repeated birth and death. The Lord alone experiences everything, anubhuta sarva, with his senses. The example is given here of what is seen, ikshita, by sleeping persons, svapna janam. Sometimes in a dream, an ordinary living entity creates many different bodies and is able to see them all with his senses, nimisha, through the living entities. In the same way, the Supreme Lord sees everything with his senses. Because he is the master of the potencies of transcendental knowledge, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is never bound or limited in his knowledge. So he's seeing everything through here, so it's not that he's not part of it, but the point is it's a matter, do you want to be part of it in the transcendental realm, in the transcendental pastimes, or part of it in the material pastimes? Does that make sense? In other words, you do any activity, it will go to the Lord's senses. But if you're not doing it to please the Lord, you don't get the credit for that. Right? You get the credit for pleasing his senses in the material world. Right, through the universal form, without your knowledge. Right? Does that make sense? So that's called mundane. But if you're conscious of it, then pleasing the senses then takes on the spiritual quality. Yeah? Right? So in other words, the whole point is just be conscious of Krishna. That's the bottom line. All this technicality is just to show that if you're conscious of Krishna, then everything will be nice. If you're not, it's only the service, but then it'll be a problem. That doesn't mean that you're not focused on your service. Prabhupada made the point. It's not that Arjuna was sitting there rolling on his chariot, meditating on Krishna in ecstasy during the battle. No, he was thinking how to best shoot these arrows to kill the enemy. But he was doing that to please Krishna, and there are those times when there is a break when he goes back to thinking of Krishna. Does that make sense? Like that. So it's not that if you're not this moment thinking, but your purpose is there, that's fine. But it's not that it can just remain like that. There has to be times where you do connect back to the one you're working for. Does that make sense? Right? Like, the husband goes out, he works all day, he gets money for the family, so in his mind, I'm doing everything for the family. But still, the family has to hear that he's doing this for them. Does that make sense? Doesn't make sense. Better remain a brahmacharya. Okay. Means even though one is going out and one is doing the activities of raising money, taking care, making all arrangements for the house and family and protecting, if you don't tell directly to the family members that you have affection for them, I'm using euphemisms here, then there'll be problem. Right? Because the relationship, that's a side thing. In other words, the activity itself is only a medium to show, but still that direct showing of that affection must be there. Does that make sense? So you have to have that affection, you have to express that affection, and you have to prove it through activities. Does that make sense? Right? Like that. Okay. Yeah, I'll just finish these okay. Two, and then we'll go back to the Western philosophers. Four, because with the activities of his mind, the Lord sees everything. He is described with the word sarvadhi vrityanu anubhuta sarvada, sarva. The Shruti Shastra, Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 1-5, explains that before the creation of the material mind and senses, the Supreme Personality of Godhead could see. As a sleeping person can see anything he wishes in his dream, or can create anything he wishes in his dream, so the Supreme Lord, simply by his wish, can create anything. That is what is said here.
Also, the Lord has his name, Satyasankalpa.
Satyasankalpa, yes. Yeah. Whatever he thinks, Satyasankalpa means whatever he thinks or desires happens. Yeah. It becomes truth. His sankalpa means his determination becomes satya, truth. Whatever is his wish. That's why in this we see he takes up the position of mukdata, so that even though he has the desire, then he goes through the pleasure of actually seeing it be happen. Right? Mukdata means he comes under the illusion of the yogamaya, so he doesn't know what's going to happen. And so then he has that desire, and then yogamaya arranges it, and it happens, that makes him happy. But otherwise, this sarvagya, then as he's thinking, it's happening. So there's no difference. It's just then it's that control. It's just control. But the pleasure is that the interaction.
There's an interesting counterpoint to this, because the opposite of sankalpa is vikalpa. Actually, the two mental functions, the main functions of the mind, as Prabhupada said, are to accept and reject. So when the mind is accepting something, that is called sankalpa. Mm. And when the mind is rejecting something, that's called vikalpa. Mm. So as Maharaj was explaining, whatever the Lord accepts, that is the reality. There is no argument. You see, as it is stated in the Bhagavatam, Dhamman tu shakshat bhagavat pranitam. Whatever the Lord decides or says, that is Dharma. And the rishis, the devatas, the vidyadharas, the charanas, the siddhas, their opinions, they better match up, or they're just not real.
My way is a highway.
So sometimes you read where in purports, particularly in the Gita, Srila Prabhupada is stating, it seems like a strange phrase if we don't understand this. Sri Krishna gives his opinion. That's his sankalpa, but his opinion is the truth. It is the ultimate reality. And Prabhupada also said, when Krishna appears in this world, an automatic result of his appearance is that there is a division between devotees and demons, because he is giving his opinion, and those who agree with it, no matter who they are, then they are accepted by him as his devotees. No matter who they are, what they are, they're his devotees. And conversely, no matter who they are, what they are, if they don't agree, and they're asuras. Mm-hmm. So Prabhupada also, he once a devotee left ISKCON for a while in the early days, and it was for about half a year, and in that half year's time, of course, he became involved in sinful activities, and then he returned to ISKCON, to the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada, when at some, I don't remember the temple, but it was at some temple in America, quite in the early days. And Prabhupada was very happy to see him return. And this devotee very tearfully said to Srila Prabhupada, you know, very emotionally, that he was begging forgiveness, and he said to his divine grace that, I simply want to forget these last 6 months, everything that happened. I simply want to forget it all and just reinstate myself in devotional service. And Srila Prabhupada remarked that if you forget it, then Krishna will forget it. So you see, if Krishna forgets it, that is vikalpa. And that means it never happened. Mm. Mm-hmm. You see, that's how our karma is removed. When we say initiation, the spiritual master takes our karma. What the spiritual master is actually doing is praying to Krishna, please accept this candidate as your disciple, and don't take into account any of his past activities. And if the spiritual master is on the level where he can ask such things of Krishna, and Krishna, his mental process will be in agreement with that, then by vikalpa, Krishna will forget all the sinful activities, whatever that person may have done in the past 20, 30 years or whatever of his life. Krishna will forget, and it is good as having never happened. And that's how we get out of this material world. Krishna simply forgets. But, as Prabhupada said, you must forget.
Mm-hmm.
You see, we have to forget. That means we have to become. This is the whole point here. And that Shukadeva Goswami, he's speaking of in this chapter and will continue to speak of, this point of fixing the mind exclusively on the Lord. If one can do this, then there's simply no room for what has been termed extracurricular activities. Activities outside of the sphere of Krishna consciousness. They cannot stand. We forget them, and Krishna forgets them, and they never happen. This is liberation. When the living entity goes back home, back to Godhead, it's as good as this. He is. You see, a Kripa Siddha or Sadhana Siddha, he becomes, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says this, he becomes as good as a Nitya Siddha, because there's no karmic paper trail,
mm-hmm.
because the Lord.
No bureaucracy. No bureaucracy.
It's a vikalpa. It doesn't exist anymore. This is it. You can understand this one. If Krishna is, if the Lord is creating living entities, creating universes simply by his thinking, his sankalpa, then he can also decreate
mm-hmm.
his
mm-hmm.
vikalpa just mm-hmm. as well. And this is our hope for liberation.
Mm-hmm.
But then we must become ekaina.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Because the thing is, whatever you're, means you're focusing on Krishna himself as a person, you know, then one will interact with him on that level. And then the illusion, the material world, since it was an illusion that the material interaction was real, is forgotten because it wasn't real. But if you don't forget it, then you're absorbed in Krishna's lila in the material world, so you'll stay in that lila. Because you're remembering it, therefore that's the platform which you're actually interacting with Krishna. So you're taking part in his material lila, so you'll remain here.
Rig Veda says the seed of the mind is calm, desire. So the reason we remember it is because we have desire for it. And Krishna in the heart simply reciprocates.
Mm-hmm.
He satisfies the desire by giving the facility.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
So that seed must be uprooted, and that is only possible, as Brahma Samhita says, by devotional service.
Bhakti Yoga. Mm.
Karmis, the jnanis, they can become very, you know, progressed. Karmis can, by observing Varnashram Dharma perfectly for 100 births, they can attain the position of Lord Brahma. A jnani can, by attaining complete understanding of the Vedanta, can enter the Brahma Jyoti. But that doesn't mean that they have given their hearts to Krishna.
Mm.
And therefore, mm-hmm. the hearts can again become filled with desire.
So is that clear? Right. It's just the in other words, where the focus is, because this is mentioning the concentrate. If you concentrate on the material, you'll interact with Krishna on the material platform. If you concentrate on Krishna in his original form, then we will interact with him on that platform. Right? It's easy. So desire is the key. Like that. Is that clear? Yeah? Yeah.
I have a question. In the past, you make very, very simple things. In Israel, time for life, the Yamadutas come for God, or this, or that.
It means if you're a devotee, then they don't bother you. Yamadutas don't deal with devotees. They only deal with non-devotees.
Just make sure you always wear tilak and neckpiece. It's in the Bhagavatam. Yamaraj told the Yamadutas, do not come near anyone whose forehead is bedecked with tilak and neck with kantimala. And the Yamadutas, whatever you did, they won't even come near you.
Yeah.
They're afraid.
Yeah.
He was so strong. Warning them, don't even get near them. And Prabhupada, he confirmed that when one becomes a devotee, then, you know, we may be a Mishra Bhakta, there may still be materialistic activities infiltrating our devotional service. We're not pure. But who settles this? Who's the judge of this? It is Krishna. Even it is stated in the Vedic literature that sometimes devotees, they've been devotees, and they find themselves being brought before Yamaraj. But then that Yamaraj, he reveals himself to be Lord Narayan. First, it's just sort of like a shock, you know, that because you may have been doing things that you shouldn't have done. And there you are in front of Yamaraj. And then suddenly he reveals himself in his form as Lord Narayan. And it's like, you were naughty. And so then Lord Narayan will... It's just as with Ajamil and the Vishnu Dutas. The Vishnu Dutas were taking the... As Prabhupada says, they could have passed themselves off as Lord Narayan. But sometimes Lord Narayan himself, personally, or some devotees, takes the form of Yamaraj and then reveals himself to be Lord Narayan and then gives a program of rectification. Don't worry, you're not going to hell. I know you're my devotee, but you did improper things. You did not engage in my pure devotional service, so you're not eligible to go back home, back to Godhead. But here's a program for you, just like the Yamadutas gave to Ajamil. And if you do this, then you can come back. So you might get scared in this way. But if you have neck beads, Kanti Mala, you'll never come before Yamaraj.
Number five. Because the Lord is thus aware of everything, he is called Satyam, the Supreme Truth, and because he is the creator of everything, he should be worshipped, Bhajate. That is the meaning. A yogi perfect in meditation on the Lord's universal form, who has mastered the steady fixation of every one of his knowledge-acquiring senses upon the universal form, sees everything in the universal form. In this way, he worships Bhajata, Lord Narayana, who is the Supreme Truth, Satyam, an ocean of bliss, Ananda Nidhim, the universal form, and the Supersoul present in everyone's heart. One should become attached, subject to any benefits anyatra obtained by meditating on the universal form. For that attachment, yata, will make one fall, atmapata, into the cycle of repeated birth and death. Because you're, in other words, this is a very delicate point. This is important that this is brought out, is that when you're dealing with seeing everything in relationship to the universal form because it is Krishna, you shouldn't think that it's fine and okay to enjoy. Right? Oh, it's spiritual, so it's all right. No, it's still, the results of it still have to be given to Krishna, even though you still see it in connection with Krishna. It's just a matter of the gross and the subtle. The gross, you know, the results of that you can't use for yourself. You're using it to please Krishna. So the same way the results of this metaphysical meditation also have to be used for Krishna. Does that make sense? So the principle is the same. It's just pointing out that because it's subtle, we might make the mistake. Right? Just like in how you say, even it's a common misnomer that if gross, you know, the senses, the gross objects, that's considered, you know, sinful material like this. Or, but if it's subtle, then even though it's only come up to the platform of the senses being used on the subtle platform, it's mistaken as spiritual. Right? Means if just like, let us say I go out into nature and I appreciate just the potency of life, that experience I will call spiritual. Right? That's common these days. Or there was a very deep, like kind of like feeling between two persons that kind of had a openness about it, a freshness about it, rather than just lust, it will be called spiritual. Does that make sense? In other words, anything that's not gross, that has an uplifting, subtle element, will be mistaken as spiritual. Right? So this point here is making you, this point is, it's still not spiritual. And even if it was, still you can't enjoy it. Right? Means the residents of the spiritual world do not enjoy the spiritual world. They enjoy serving Krishna. Right? And pleasing Him is more than trying to enjoy it yourself directly. Right? Krishna doesn't Krishna, He has expanded the energy, so therefore it's His, He can enjoy it. We are that energy, so we simply try to please Him. In pleasing Him, we get more than what He gets. Right? That's the way it goes. It's just the nature, the feminine nature. It's whatever the masculine gets from it, the feminine will get 9 times that or 10 times that. Always. It's just the way it is, the experience. Right? You see in the Bhagavatam, that king, you keep going back and forth with a woman, man, woman, man. So they said, so you want to remain a man or a woman? He picked a woman because the results of the emotions and the sensuality was 10 times greater. So
I'd like to remark just in this case. I have 2 things to say. Now that Maharaj has said this, this just came to mind. It's interesting that in Greek mythology, so-called, I don't accept Greek or any of those old so-called legends as mythology. I think that they're Veda, but in different modes.
Yeah, degradation of the story and stuff.
Yes. But so there was sage. I think his name was something like Thetius. And he was blind. And aged sage, very wise, but he was blind. And he, it's a long story, he got his eyesight back, but in the process, he had to spend some time in the form of a woman, I think a witch or a sorceress named Circe, well known figure in Greek mythology, cursed him to be a woman. And so he spent, I forget, it was at least a year, if not longer, in the body of a woman. And this was the reason why he became blind, actually, if I remember correctly. His eyes were okay, but then he had to be a woman for some time. And then when he was returned to a man's form after that period, he was asked by the male devatas involved, the male demigods of Olympus, so what was it like? And he said, and this is directly what he said, it directly corresponds with what Srila Prabhupada says in the Bhagavatam. He said, women are 9 times more lusty than men. You know that's in the Bhagavatam? Mm-hmm. 9 times? He said, women are 9 times more lusty. And then when he said, Zeus, you know, Zeus, who is the counterpart of Indra, his wife became so angry. There are also stories like this in the Puranas, where one female, you may know this, there is one such story where...
The one who's the desire personified.
And yeah. She begins to just talk yeah. openly about what's really going on in the heart of women.
Yeah.
And all the, you know, women in the assembly, they become all like really freaked out and angry with her, and they're ready to tear her apart.
Yeah, yeah.
Shut up!
They went to Brahma and told him, said, I think it was Lakshmi, Saraswati, and who the third one was. But they said, if you don't stop her talking, we're finished. So he went over and said, okay, very nice, and all this, and then rounded up.
Anyway, so Hera, who is the wife of Zeus, then she cursed the sage to become blind as a result of him revealing this. So, of course, Prabhupada said, women, the women here, when we say women, we're only talking about body. So Prabhupada said, the women who joined the consciousness movement are not actually women. So.
Mm-hmm.
These kind of statements actually do not apply. But, unless, as Prabhupada said, unless you still think you're a woman, mm-hmm. then they do apply. He actually said that to one of his very senior female disciples. Because they came, she and another very senior disciples, they were upset when they read these sort of things in the early drafts of the Bhagavatam. They're not upset, but just, you know, what's our position? And Prabhupada said, you are spirit soul, you are not woman. Of course, if you think you are a woman, then these things apply.
Yeah.
But you are spirit soul. So, then the other thing I wanted to say, unfortunately, is after saying this,
forgot that.
Online, what were you talking about before this? You just made that as a last remark, and before you were talking about...
They're talking about the enjoying the spiritual
energy. Oh, yes. Yeah, I wanted to say that in Sri Chaitanya Shikshamrita, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur speaks about five levels of mundane religiosity. So first is the worship of Shakti, which would mean in India the tantrics, and in the West would mean the scientists.
Mm-hmm.
So they are direct worshippers of the, you know, because material, like for example, in the Middle Ages, the alchemists, they were trying to transmute elements. They were trying to get lead from gold. And apparently this, they got from the Arabs, and the Arabs got from India, and Prabhupada explained how these things were done by yogis. And so the alchemists in Europe, I've read about a little bit, there's some records of how they did it. It's actually quite, everything is symbolical spiritually, but the aim of it is to get gold.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole symbolical, because gold is, Hiranya is also the color of spiritual effulgence.
Mm-hmm.
And so, there's things with the colors, the three modes of nature, and then gold is the highest. And you can interpret this all spiritually, but they applied it to the material nature for the purpose of getting gold.
Mm.
And so they were obviously very elevated persons. I mean, a real alchemist would have been more accomplished in material science than any scientist today, because no scientists today consider the transmutation of elements to be impossible. It can't be done. Base elements, you can't change one to another. You can make alloys, you can mix, you know, like, what is that, cobalt, steel, you know, so you can mix the element cobalt with steel and you can get, that's an alloy, that's a mixture of two elements. Change one element to another is now considered impossible. But the alchemists apparently could do that. So they were more advanced because they were actually using something that was originally, I'm talking about European alchemists, but they were using something that originally came from India. Mm. And those who were successful were those who actually followed the austerity, fasting, brahmacharya, all the tapasya, everything. And they could do it, but the aim was just to mess around with the material nature. Prabhupada, even in this category, includes the aborigines who bow down before mountains or lightning flashes. They worship trees. They, you know, very so-called primitive animists. They say they see spirit everywhere. But these are the kind of so-called spiritualists. They're called shapeshifters. They can, you know, change their forms from man to animal, because the spirit they take on is some kind of creature spirit, which you see in the universe. There's a whole hierarchy, so even these animals, they're ultimately going back to Kasyapa and one of his wives. Mm-hmm. So they're under the protection, under the guidance even of some higher demigods. So there's the shamans, they plug into that, and they can get, you know, some amazing results. They can do magic. And I recently read about a shaman in Malaysia who actually captured a vampire in a glass bottle. And I saw a photograph of it. It looked like a cloud. It's like a cloud, but there was a mouth. It's very deadly looking teeth. And you capture them in a bottle. So this, you know, Buddha worship, all this stuff falls under this first category. And then above that, those who muck around with the material energy, the gross material energy, they may come to the understanding that there are laws, there are principles behind this. And so they get a vague idea of something higher behind gross matter. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur even includes the impersonalists, nirvisheshavadis. They're impersonal. It's just a vague idea of something spiritual. Mm-hmm. It's not very focused. So actually, it's not very advanced, really. Yeah. And then there are those who are, you know, astral phenomena or something. But it's something more subtle than this gross matter. Mm-hmm. And then they get into that. And then above that, a third level is Panchopasana. They want to achieve, they also ultimately want to achieve this impersonal principle, but unlike the Nirvisheshavadis, who immediately, what you see, their mistake is they immediately try to get rid of all form, and that's what Krishna says in the 12th chapter of Gita. That's very, very, very difficult to do. So actually Shankaracharya, Sripad Shankaracharya, came up with this Panchopasana, which is originally Vedic, which even it's found in the Brahma Samhita, but these were ways of approaching Krishna. But he changed it for ways of getting over rupa, form, and then coming to the impersonal. And so the lowest stage is Devi, Maya Devi or Durga, and then there's Ganesh and
Surya
and then Shiva, and then Lord Vishnu. But this is not Lord, this is Vishnu as a demigod, mm-hmm, who is to be transcended. But that's why the Mayavadi impersonalists address one another, Namo Narayan, because they're actually considering they have become one with that, which Srila Prabhupada called philosophize Narayan. Philosophize Vishnu. So this Bhaktivinoda Thakur classified as more advanced than the simple Nirvisheshavadis. Mm-hmm. Then beyond that are the yogis, who envision the Lord in the heart. But this is also philosophized Vishnu. They're following Patanjali's process, and Patanjali said there is Ishwara in the heart. And he said he is omniscient, he's all-knowing, and he has no vasanas, no, that means no subconscious desires. But also he has no shakti, he's not omnipotent. So this is not a complete understanding of the Lord. This is partial.
Because he's alone.
Yeah, he's more of a, again, like you're talking about, subtle.
Mm-hmm.
It's subtle. There's speculation. Prabhupada always said, when Prabhupada was discussing philosophy in that philosophical book, I remember when the subject of Plato and Socrates came up, and Prabhupada's decision where they were basically impersonalists, and his reason was because speculation was involved. Whenever speculation is involved, Prabhupada once said, mysticism means misty. It's unclear. So therefore, to the degree that it's unclear, you know, it's out of focus, it's impersonal. And then finally, interestingly enough, the highest stage is when you worship a human being as the Lord. That means the guru, the spiritual master, or there's like the tantrics, aham gaho upasana, you worship yourself that by visualizing the whole universe within yourself. But the thing is you get so caught up in that, this it's a wrong type of identification. Of there is a relationship between guru and God. But this is where, for instance, the Shaiva Siddhantas, the Vira Shaivas, they went wrong. They actually were originally a part of the Vishnu Swami Sampradaya. The Vishnu Swami Sampradaya is otherwise known as the Rudra Sampradaya, but then they started worshipping Lord Shiva. And it's a very fine line, because Prabhupada said, Lord Shiva is the same as Mahavishnu. But the point is, we're not supposed to... Mahavishnu is not actually there to be worshipped. He's there to create the material... He's Sankarsana. He's there to create the material world, wind it up and recreate it. And those who become attached to him, as Prabhupada says in the third canto, in a purport, those who become caught up with Mahavishnu's position as creator and recreator, become fascinated with that, this is the actual fall down. A living entity comes into the material world as Brahma, first time. And the purpose is, you just do this service, you be Brahma. That's why Brahma, we find in Bhagavatam, Brahma's praying, please let me not become attached. But it's very, very difficult. And Brahma at the end of the Mahapralaya, he goes back to Mahavishnu. But if he has any desire, if he has any fond memories of being in that position, like being the local god of a universe, then that's where he'll end up. When he'll sing prayers to Mahavishnu, but when Mahavishnu begins to respond to those prayers by breathing out, and the universes reappear, Brahma will become more attracted to the Aishwarya of Mahavishnu than Mahavishnu himself, and will enter back again. And Prabhupada said that is the actual fall down of the jiva. It's not the first time he's Brahma, it's the second time. And Prabhupada said the second time he could be Brahma. He said this in December of 1975 in Vrindavan on Morning Walk. Yes, he might be Brahma, or he might be a cat or a dog. Because he's become attached to material nature, now he's under Maya's control. And however his desires manifest, then Maya will just reciprocate and place him in the appropriate position. So he may, everybody wants to be Brahma in this material world. Everybody wants, you see. I even once read about a philosopher who was speaking of logical bubble. Everyone lives inside their own little logical bubble. And I immediately thought of Lord Brahma. So everyone's trying to be Brahma. We all have our own little logical bubbles around ourselves, you know. And he said we have to break through that in order to really communicate with one another. Otherwise, you know, we can't even talk the same language. We can't. So actually, that's a state of us even now. That's a state of a human being or a dog or a cat. They live inside their own logical bubble. So that's how it's possible a second time for someone who is Brahma, one who is Brahma, to become anything. Because that logical bubble, you know, may the equal sign of all the logic may be grow sex life or something like that, and then it gets an appropriate body. So shall we go on to, that was my comment to Maharaj's thing, and we want to finish up with this Western philosophy. So last time we spoke about the mundus sensibilis, or the sensible world, which is very similar to the jagrata state of wakefulness, which is when the Lord enters the heart, Aniruddha enters the heart as the Paramatma, and then everything becomes active. The senses become active, the mind. Actually, in the Vedic version, you see, in the Western version, everything is coming inward. But in the Vedic version, the mind is being projected outwards through the senses, you see. So the energy of the Paramatma is coming out through the senses and perceiving the world that way. And of course, information is coming back. It's like radar, you know? I don't know if you know how radar works, but initially the signal goes out, strikes an object, and bounces back. Whereas the Western idea is that everything just kind of floods in.
Well, that's because they think they're the center, God, so naturally it comes to me rather than I'm energy that's going out.
Yeah, that's a good point. They think they're the center and things will naturally come to them. But actually, so this is energized by the presence of the super soul. But as we mentioned last time, as Bhagavatam mentions, Aniruddha and the expansion of Sankarshan within this universe. There's a Mahasankarshan, who is Mahavishnu, outside the universe, but within this universe, there is a Sankarshan, and he is interchangeable with Aniruddha. And that's why sometimes, most of the time we read that Aniruddha is the Lord of the mind, but sometimes you'll find in Prabhupada's purports and in verses where it is said that Aniruddha is the Lord of the collective false ego. And then you wonder, you know, you become confused. What's this? But you have to remember that Aniruddha and Sankarshan, it actually states in one verse, they're the same personality.
One thing on this, I think it was just last week or something, there's, and the end, I think it was in the last chapter of this, then in a purport where Prabhupada's pointing out that the mind, I mean, the false ego is a combination of the values of the mind and the particular intelligence to identify it. Mm. So you could say that, you know, what the mind actually values is the false ego. So you could say that Aniruddha is false.
And Prabhupada also says the problem, actually the problem with our being in the material world, he actually said, is not really the mind. It's the mind plus the false ego.
Mm.
You see, if that book ever comes out, it would be called Vedanta Philosophy, but actually the original title was Bhagavad Philosophy, but for sales in Europe, those who are printing the books, they're printing in India, that's why it's taking so long. Hopefully by Mayapur it'll be out. It's not a big book, it's just the essentials of what the Bhagavatam has to say about psychology, which is more than most of devotees know. And there also, Prabhupada makes very clear that the mind, in its original state as the energy of Aniruddha, is pure Krishna consciousness. And it's only because the mind associates with the false ego that, you know, then we get all this, you know, I'm so mental, I'm so... But actually, it's the false ego that's causing the problem.
Mm.
If it was just the mind, you'd be Krishna conscious.
Yes.
Because the original mind is a state of attraction to Krishna. And the material mind is a state of attraction to something else, beginning with this body. And that is made to happen by the false ego. The false ego is that magnetic force that binds the mind to something else other than Krishna. So anyway, I was saying that the last time, just at the end of the class, that the human being, his svabhava is rajasika in the mode of passion. And therefore, it means that very few human beings are actually in this jagrata, or wakeful state, which is the state of aniruddha consciousness. So actually, those who are in that state are like, these are persons who are minimum in the mode of material goodness, like pure brahmanas, you know, who are nicely following everything. They are Krishna conscious, at least to the degree of super soul realization, which of course is not, this is not the complete Krishna consciousness of the Bhagavatam, but it is a good beginning. There, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur in that book, Brahman and Vaishnava, he clearly says that is a transcendental state. There are three transcendental states. Brahmananda, if one is actually situated in Brahmajyoti, then one is a real Brahman. Brahmagyan iti Brahmana. So this is a minimum qualification of a Brahmana, a real transcendentally situated Brahmana, is that he knows the Brahmajyoti. Material Brahmana, in other words, a caste Brahmana, a ritualistic Brahmana, he simply knows Brahman in the form of the sound vibration, the shabda, of the ritualistic performances of the Vedas. And therefore his performances are, you know, they're all materially motivated, so he's not actually on the transcendental platform. And that's when the term Brahmana is just considered an upadhi. But when a Brahmana actually knows Brahman, then he's transcendentally situated. And better than that is the Paramatma, realized personality, and best is, of course, the Vaishnava. And then interestingly enough, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in that book, he says that Brahman realized, Brahmavadi, can come up to Paramatma realization, and then from there can go to Bhagavan realization, and in the same way, Bhagavan realized can come downward. Paramatma, Brahman, and then to material Brahman Upadhi. That's how a devotee falls down. He clearly says that. When Bhagavan realization, one can fall down. One falls down to the position of a material Brahman. So it's an interesting point. So anyway, the human being, you see, very, very few human beings are actually in the jagrata state. That means fully awake. Their senses and their minds are in the mode of goodness, and they're seeing the material world as it is, as it is seen from the perspective of the Paramatma, which is also a definition of Krishna consciousness. Seeing the material world as Paramatma sees it, as the energy of the Lord meant for the Lord's service. Very, very few are on that level. Now, let's consider ourselves. Let's just consider ourselves. When you know, look at your own mind. How much time do we spend? The reality is here and now. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in that famous poem, forget the past that sleeps and ne'er the future dream at all, but act in times that are with thee, and progress thee shall call. How much time do we spend in the past? Thinking things that happened, which are actually non-existent dreams. Or how much time do we spend thinking about the future? What might happen, good or bad? That also doesn't exist. That's also a dream. How much time do we spend dwelling on how it could have been, or what I would like to have. I mean, of course, if you want, if you would like to have Krishna's lotus feet, that's wonderful. There's a proper use for everything, including cultural imagination. Prabhupada clearly said that. But if it's for anything material, as Maharaj was making the point about subtle. So if the mind wanders into the subtle realm, and for very advanced persons, then we would be talking about higher planetary systems, to be a siddha, automatically endowed. Prabhupada said, born with the asta siddhis, coming out of the womb, fully endowed with the eighth mystic power. Can you imagine? Prabhupada said, these siddhas, they walk on the rays of the sun like we walk on staircase. They just walk up or glide up. It's more like an escalator because the sun is energetic. So they can just glide through the universe without even, they don't even need a vahana. They just use their own body and fly anywhere they like and expand themselves in huge forms or contract themselves small as an atom or penetrate anything. That's a siddha, or even higher up to the point of Brahma. So any desire like that, you see, this is all included within dreaming. And so this is where most human beings are at, in the svapna stage, even when we're so-called awake. And you can see this if you study your own mind. Just see how your mind flashes. So many, if you just stopped and really looked at things as they really are, as Krishna has made them, and Krishna and consider deeply the use, the actual use, why there is a temple and what Krishna wants us to do in that temple, to worship Him, instead of hovering on the mental plane and thinking so many things. Then we'd be awake, but we spend so much time on the mental plane. So that's why the human being, you see, the nature being rajasic means even when we're awake, we dream. And that's why we have to take birth again, because that is called karmatmaka. The mind is colored by karma, fruitive desire. We want things that we don't have. And that dissatisfaction, that is the essence of material desire. That we're always feeling a lack of something, and we think that it'll be satisfied by getting something material, and the mind becomes fixed on this or that. Well, if I had a new motorbike, if I had a this, I had a that, the other thing. And that's how we continue on in the cycle of birth and death. So this is very important to understand. And you see, we were speaking of Aniruddha, who represents Paramatma, minimum material mode of goodness, better the Vasudeva Sattva. But then there's also the collective false ego of Sankarshan, which is the mode of ignorance, and what is between the two? It's got to be. You've got to be able to answer this question. Come on. You've got goodness up here, you've got ignorance down there. What comes between? Rajaguna. So that's why, that's the mess we human beings are in. That's the human condition. Rajasa. So I wanted to finish up on that. I thought that was a very important point. So still we haven't got to the next. So anyway, tomorrow we'll get to extramundus, which will be very interesting. Very interesting example is given. So thank you very much. It's 9 o'clock. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.
Jai. Jai.
When we go to the spiritual world, does the mind go with us, or is it just the soul?
The mind is there, the spiritual mind. Yeah.
Why are things like you house of light, because you forget you're born in the first life. That doesn't mean you also die in the
karma.
Say again. Like also you forget the karma, like you forget what you're doing in your past life.
Yeah. So it doesn't matter.
But if you still then those desires come through from the last life, those become important to you. Do you understand? So whatever you're thinking now, that's based on what you've done before. So whatever you desire now means it has been done before. Otherwise you wouldn't desire it. Does that make sense? So you're being influenced by the results of your previous life's activities. You know? Like that. But you don't remember it, which is good. You don't remember it, so it's good. But the point is, it's whatever you're thinking of now that's valuable that needs to be connected to Krishna, because otherwise then your activities will take you away from Krishna. Does that make sense? So that's why you have to be very, very careful. Whatever you're doing, you have to see what's your purpose, your motive, and all that, why you do things. Because you don't want to get distracted. You might, like, even if you have a situation you may like, but it has to be used properly. You know what I'm saying? Does that make some sense? Just like, let's say you're at the school. So then being at school, doing the activities at the school and all that, that's what's important. Then when you go home in the evening, then those activities, whatever goes on there, then you'll be focused on those. Then when you come back to the school, then you'll be focused on those activities. Does that make sense? But otherwise, if you're at the school and always thinking at the home, you know, or if you're at the home and, you know, thinking of going out and playing, you know, instead of interacting with the family or doing duties in the house, then it won't work nicely. Does that make sense?
I just want to.
So the point is, whatever desires are there, that it's just connected to Krishna. It doesn't matter what it was. So that's why we don't worry that whatever it was in the last lifetime, it doesn't matter. Because those will be reflected in the desires in this life. So we just take those and properly connect them.
Just fold it in half.
Yeah?
Okay.
Okay.